Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, former President Barack Obama pointing his finger at China and Russia, calling them out for what he said is a dangerous lack of urgency in doing anything to cut emissions and deal with climate change in their country. He said, when it comes to climate, time is really running out. We are nowhere near where we need to be. And he's right, we're not. And I love the Bill Nye, the science guy, clip from the John Oliver show, where he just lit the planet on fire and was very blunt. I don't need to explain to you what's going on. The planet is burning. But did it in a way that you would have expected the good Bill Nye to actually do. But lots to get to, lots to talk about, especially around this infrastructure plan, what we can achieve, what we can go forward on, and especially taking on China. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is good to be with you.
So is the president right? China and Russia have a dangerous lack of urgency when it comes to dealing with the climate change issue?
Yeah, I think that if there were such thing as an outliers club, they would be the founding members right now, unfortunately. Trump wanted to join them, obviously, but he's no longer able to join any club globally.
Thankfully.
Thankfully. And I think that, you know, for Russia and China, slightly different circumstances. I mean, China's at a different level of development, but it is far from a developing nation now. I mean, it has some of the most advanced infrastructure, manufacturing, but it's gotten there a very, very dirty way. And it hasn't cleaned up. And I remember, Rick, even about 10 or 11 years ago, we commissioned a study inside China of pollution controls in the steel industry. And it was shocking to discover that even the very slim laws they had were never enforced. I mean, just they weren't. There were no fines, there were no consequences. And so whatever, you know, you always have to take whatever China says it's going to do with a grain of salt. But the fact that they're just saying that they're not cooperating on climate is a real problem. Now, the question then becomes, and this is a debate that I'll be honest, kind of divides progressives. There's some progressives who say, we don't want to confront China on other issues because we need their collaboration on climate change.
Right.
Okay. Unfortunately, I think that doesn't recognize the reality is that China is so big right now, you can't ignore these other issues because they have economic consequences, they have security consequences. And one thing we know, Rick, that there's not a lot of pressure points that we have with China, but we do know from the past that if there is a group of nations that gets together and China's out there kind of doing its own thing, that China does want to come back and have a seat at the table and doesn't necessarily want to be shamed that way. So I think it will take a little more than just Obama saying this. I think it will take, in addition to the Biden administration, I think it will take the EU, other countries really actively trying to encourage China to do the right thing. And if China is unwilling to do the right thing, to then say, well, there's going to be serious consequences to that. Unfortunately, and this is just the last point I'll make, there's something that stands in the way of that, which is multinational companies,
right,
who are addicted to the low cost of production in China, which is artificially low because of the government, because of the pollution, because of the carbon output, because of the labor exploitation. And so they need to be acting more responsibly every single day to really solve this climate challenge that we have.
Yeah, you know, cheap labor and lax environmental regulations, that's heroin for a CEO. And our CEOs are addicted to it. And that's part of where policy has to change that. We need to have an intervention with corporate America. And part of it is dealing with our trade issues with China.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. I was struck by something that Tim Cook said today. The New York Times had a conference, the Andrew Ross Sorkin, the Dealbook conference. He gets a whole bunch of CEOs. And Tim Cook was asked about why they're in China continuing to do business. And he said, well, I think it's a bad thing for businesses to be sitting on the sidelines. So, and here he uses some selective reasoning here, because he sits on the sidelines when it comes to calling China out for a genocide of the Uyghur people, or the environmental degradation that we see, or the labor exploitation, all of which Apple benefits from. And so, you know, it gets me that Apple and these other companies that want to look so responsible when it comes to climate are enabling this, and then are making excuses for why they aren't taking a harder line on some of the things that are happening.
That's curious. It's a curious statement. I mean, on the sidelines. You mean like on the sidelines where in China they are like the surveillance state for the Chinese communist government? Yes. I mean, did I miss something here? Maybe I did. Maybe I missed something.
Yeah. It's. I mean, the problem is that they are, Apple and these other companies are addicted to this production platform that's been developed in China. But here's the thing, Rick. You know, could they do it a different way? Absolutely. I mean, Apple seems to be able to do whatever it wants. I mean, it has a ton of cash, has a bunch of smart people. If they really wanted to and they set their minds to it, they could, like, you know what? We could actually build smartphones in the United States of America.
Yeah.
The factory would look a lot different. But they could do it if they wanted to, or, you know, they could press China a little harder. You know, everybody's afraid of losing access, not only to that consumer market, but I think just as importantly, to all
Chinese
that production
cash.
Capability that's been developed there, that is like that cheap drug.
And the Chinese cash. The fact that the Chinese government gives them, you know, a bunch of cash.
Yeah. There's massive subsidies. And then all you have to do is stay in the good graces of the government. And so Apple goes out of its way to do that and to block any sort of progress here when it comes to challenging China. That's why getting things even like a ban on Uyghur forced labor is such a tough thing to get through Congress, even though it is common sense, because you have some of the multinational companies that are out there saying, well, this is not the right way to do it. We need to have a seat at the table, right? We can't be on the sidelines, Rick. So even though they're happy to sit on the sidelines and shield their eyes when there are abuses happening right in front of their faces.
Yeah, they were ordering popcorn or something at that time. Never mind, let it go. But here's the thing. You bring up the other side of this, that I have a lot of friends on the left who are like, well, you know, we would love to do that domestic production stuff that you believe is important, but we can get such cheap panels from China. We could do so much more with the resources we have. There's still this argument that we need their production capacity to be able to fight climate change. And I'm like, well, what's the point in creating a cleaner economy if it doesn't benefit any workers in this country?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just let's be very clear about this. The people who speak the loudest about this are the solar developers, because they like bringing, like Walmart, the cheap stuff in from China, deploying it here and making a ton of cash. They're not providing a public good here. All right. They're making a profit. And so if they have to reestablish a supply chain that doesn't depend on forced labor, it's going to cost them money. It's going to bite into their margin a little bit. But guess what? They need to do that, because it is not, you cannot say it's a dilemma whether you are concerned about human rights or you want to make progress on climate. You got to do both, and you can do both. And so I'm glad that the Biden administration seems to understand this and seems to be wanting to keep tariffs in place on solar products and others coming from China, you know, some of which are made, you know, with parts or components that are produced by forced labor in the Uyghur region, number one. And number two, when it comes to federal support for clean energy, the Biden administration wants Made in America preferences. That is, if you're going to develop this, you're going to get a bigger tax credit if it's made in America. or if it's going to be deployed directly by the federal government, it has to be made in America.
It should.
That's the way that you bring some of this over, these types of incentives.
No, absolutely. And you know, we create the next generation of good family-sustaining wage jobs and clean up our economy at the same point. But, you know, here again, we're in this moment where, you know, as you've said, there's going to be a lot of people looking to game the system, a lot of people to try and figure out how to cheat. And I've been saying, I think we need, you know, kind of like, you know, where's today's Harry Truman? Where's the Truman Commission to make sure that we hold corporations accountable and that we actually, you know, find the cheats and in public, you know, walk them down the aisle? Because at some point, the money that we're spending has got to be used for the aims that we're spending it for. And we need to hold people accountable, even if it means we start perp walking people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to build on something that you said, Rick, about, you know, having the jobs and the climate goals being met, because there's good evidence that you're going to build more support for the climate goals if you know the jobs are going to come with it. And the latest example is this Ford announcement that they're going to build these massive new battery electric vehicle facilities in the United States. They're going to be in Tennessee and Kentucky. So there will be battles about how good these jobs are going to be, and we'll wage those. But the fact of the matter is that the politicians in Tennessee and in Kentucky, none of whom have been very climate friendly, are all like, well, this is great. We're going to get some great jobs here, and we're going to, you know, and it's going to cause them to start supporting some policies that support that work, because they'll have thousands of jobs in their states that are going to be supported by this clean energy future. And I think that's like, you know, exhibit A in terms of why you need this Made in America focus when it comes to clean energy.
Especially when you're talking about the next generation of electric vehicles and all of that, that has to be built here. I mean, there can't be a way where that gets outsourced and we use our tax dollars now to fund the Chinese dominance for the next century. That just can't happen.
No, it can't happen. It would be terrible for the economic situation for the middle class in this country. The auto sector right now has an outsized influence in manufacturing and in states, you know, starting in Michigan, running the whole way down to the center of the country to Alabama. Okay. And if those jobs go away, they're not going to be great jobs that are going to come in their place. They're going to be worse jobs. And so making sure that we're doubling down on the energy efficient vehicles, the clean energy vehicles right now, is going to be very important so that we bring in those supply chains, so that we get that critical mass, and we develop that market. Otherwise, you're right, we won't get the jobs. And then it's going to make achieving our climate goals harder, because it will erode public support for doing exactly the types of things we need to be doing.
So the question then becomes, it's passed, soon it'll be signed into law, a $1.2 trillion investment in the future of our country. Again, I've been saying, not to be a Debbie Downer, but the reality is it's about four times less than we need, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers. But it's a huge first step. How fast can we get this stuff deployed? How quickly does this get out the door? How quickly do we start seeing the change that I think we both want, and I think the country desperately needs?
Yeah, Rick, it's a great question. And so it's not like a stimulus check that you're going to get tomorrow. Okay, that is true. But this is more like the, you know, when you're taking a medicine, this is more like the time release capsule. Okay, you'll get some of it when you take the medicine some down the road. And I know right now that the Commerce Department, other agencies are ready to green light some things that are critically important, like energy grid security, or ports, getting some ports furbished to deal with some of the supply chain issues. And I know that states are also lining up projects to be funded by this. So you will see a lot of demand built. And it ranges all the way from those roads and bridges to electric buses, to electric charging stations, to broadband for rural communities. And actually the broadband benefit is going to be felt the deepest in rural red states, where there isn't that infrastructure right now. they're going to get a preponderance of the benefits from that type of money. So almost no matter your need, you're going to get something. And you're right, it is not enough. But at the same time, it is the single largest federal investment ever made in our infrastructure. So that in and of itself is, I think, noteworthy. And the fact that we had good presidential leadership, we had virtual unanimity among Democrats, and some Republicans came on board as well, shows that when we set our, when we have leadership, when we set our minds to something, we can get something done. It's not the perfect bill, but it is a great bill. And if you told me that's what we'd end up with a year ago, I'd be super happy with where we are today.
No, I'm happy with this infrastructure bill. I want to get the other side of it done as well, because I think we desperately need to address climate change and some of our human infrastructure stuff. But as far as this goes, this is a good first step in my view. This is going to get us down the road to rebuilding and to talking about future investments. Because in my view, this isn't the end all be all. This is the beginning.
Yeah. This is one piece of what we need to do to be more competitive, more just, more equitable as a country, and to have broadly shared prosperity. And you're right, those investments in people, in job training, in childcare are going to be important. The clean energy investments are going to be important. And it will build a better American future for all of us. You're right, it has to come together. And so, you know, I'm embarrassed for the Chamber of Commerce and the other business groups that have always said, well, we're not for it now because there might be some tax increases in it. We got what we wanted. That's not the way to do business.
Yeah.
You need to understand that the Chamber, everybody else, businesses will benefit from all of these pieces of legislation that will make investments in people, in our physical infrastructure, in our clean energy future as we move ahead.
And it's 20 million new jobs potentially over the next decade. This is a good thing. It's going to help us move in the right direction. And I'm so glad you came on and helped share some of the information. As always, Scott, I appreciate you taking a little time sharing your expertise. Good stuff.
All right, Rick, thanks for having me on. Keep up the great work, man.
Thanks so much. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Make sure you check out their website, americanmanufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.